Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable this morning. It is Tuesday, the 24th of January. Very nice to have you with us. I was just busy watching the Oscar nominations. They just announced the Oscar nominations. So it's 5:30 in California, 8:30 here. And I don't know why I bothered, but it was interesting. It was interesting.
Did you see them all?
No, So this is what I do. I know I talk about this every year, but I go and see every movie that's been nominated. So there's usually like 54, 55 movies in every category, and I see every one of them. Oh. And this is my little thing. I have nothing else to do, Judy. You know where I live, so I go, All Quiet on the Western Front, which is a Netflix film, a German film, is also an international film, and is up for Best Picture. Avatar.
Wait, and on the depressing scale, what would you give it?
Well, you know, you've read the book, right?
Right.
Yeah, so you know.
Wasn't Frank Sinatra in the original one?
Yeah, this one's better.
Yeah. Good.
Avatar, The Way of Water. Or as Riz Ahmed said when he was doing the thing, The Way of Water, which I just thought was beautiful. Anyway, The Banshees of Inisherin. And if nobody has seen, have you seen it?
I just watched it.
Oh.
Okay. And I know it's depressing.
Oh, yes.
But oh. I loved it. It's Martin McDonagh. It's Colin Farrell. And by the way, we're doing this because we're vamping because we don't know where Rosemary is. Brendan Gleeson, and oh my goodness, is it a great movie?
The acting is really good, but I was startled by it. It's a good movie if you want to be startled.
Yeah, it's good. Elvis with Austin Butler. I didn't care for that film.
Except that Elvis is a huge factor in our home. Everything is about Elvis.
Yeah. So did you see Elvis, the movie?
No.
Well,
Roselle,
a huge factor. Roselle, we didn't see that movie.
Roselle saw it three times and is about to see it again.
Yeah,
is this the one with Tom Hanks?
Yes.
Tom Hanks
plays the colonel. No, plays the colonel with a weird accent and a lot of goo on his face. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, which is a fantastic film if you get a chance. Jamie Lee Curtis got a Best Supporting Actress nomination out of that, so good for her. The Fablemans is the Steven Spielberg I Became a Famous Director movie, and it's I don't know if any of you have seen it, but it's a lovely, beautiful film.
Is that a streaming movie?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you can see that. Tar is with Kate Blanchett, where she plays a maestro of an orchestra. Top Gun Maverick was the number one best-selling movie of the year. So that is on the list. Usually when they do 10 pictures, that was the idea, that you would get popular films on the list, and that made the list. Triangle of Sadness is a movie I have not seen. Women Talking, which is the Frances McDormand movie. So
has Tom Cruise ever won an Oscar?
No. Well, I don't know. No.
For A Few Good Men, he should have.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he ever won an Oscar.
Mm. Won lots of money, but
yeah, and then he gave away his Golden Globes. So yeah. I don't know, but anyway. So that was that was just a few minutes ago. So that's we've already talked about that. We don't have to talk about anything else. Let me introduce everybody. Apparently, Rosemary is on Pacific time, so we'll just start the introductions. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm taking bets that within the next 30 seconds, we'll see Rosemary.
Okay. All right. All right. That brings you in at 17:38. Good morning. Welcome. Mike Spain is the former Times Union Associate Editor. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here. Thanks.
Good to have you back. You've been traveling the world. Where have you been?
Oh, been around. I went to the Carolinas and then out to Colorado. Saw a bunch of kids and grandkids. So it was a nice trip.
Good for you. Very nice to have you back. Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
You hit it exactly on it.
Here comes Rosemary.
Yeah.
I sent you a note.
Oh, did you? I didn't see the note.
I want everybody to know I went to Rochester.
Oh, how was Rochester? How was Rochester?
It was nice. Yeah, I went to the Wegmans. Had a great time.
I went to the Wegmans.
It's sort of a museum, isn't it? First time I ever walked into a Wegmans and saw all of the ducks and other things piled high on a table. It was unbelievable.
They didn't have ducks this is when I went.
Well, I'm sorry, live ducks?
No. Dead ducks. You're, as in, you know, you're a dead duck. Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, should they have been? Here's my worry. Should they have been refrigerated?
Well, maybe, but they weren't.
Maybe they were
and
smoked.
That's the way I remember
maybe
it.
Maybe they were smoked. There you go.
I saw no ducks.
Yeah.
I saw no ducks.
Mm. All right. I'm curious about this. I have to check into what this is now. Any idea, Rosemary?
No.
Okay.
But
right.
When I went to Ithaca to visit my sister, we also went to the Wegmans. It's quite
That's
an attraction.
That's a great Wegmans.
But no ducks.
It is a great one, yeah.
Museum,
it's got like
right?
two floors.
I know.
Yeah.
I said, forget lunch. We're eating here.
Is there any real reason that you guys love Rochester?
Western New York? Because they have Wegmans all over the place. Wegmans is...
Why don't we have them here?
Well...
I never understood that.
There was, you know, this has been reported on, and there was always a theory, but never proven, and I must say that this is unproven, this was just a theory, that there was a non-proliferation agreement between the Golub Corporation and the Wegmans.
Ooh.
Now,
that ain't right.
That does not mean it's true, because in Syracuse you have right on the main drag on Route 5 in Syracuse, you have both. And there are places where they come very close to each other. But that was always rumored. But it could have been that this market, the Capital Region, is pretty saturated with other big stores. And then, you know, Walmart now has taken a huge chunk out of the grocery store business, and even Target is into it now. So it's very, very competitive, and they may be going elsewhere where they, like Western Mass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be good.
Yeah. They're in.
We'd like that.
And certainly down south, they're growing other places where they have more potential, and that's probably more like it. But people like rumors, and there's a real cult infatuation with Wegmans.
I mean, the first time I walked in one, I just felt like I was in.
It's different,
you know,
right?
Wonka world.
Yeah,
it's different.
Hannaford, Whole Foods, they're good, but they're not Wegmans.
No, it's a very Rosemary Armeo is with us. She is a adjunct professor at UAlbany as well as RPI, an investigative journalist. Good morning. How are you?
And I am now a polar plunger.
Now I saw the pictures. I was watching. I was watching this on Sunday. You sent out a before shot, and then it was a little while, and then you got the shot of you coming out of the water. And how did it go?
I am now gearing up to do Lake George, the big one, next January 1st. It's awesome. The hardest part is standing in just a bathing suit at the edge of the water waiting for the organizers to tell you to go ahead. They're doing all these commercials and just singing and dancing, and I wanted to get it. So then we go charging in, and you don't feel it.
I'm sorry, there was singing and dancing?
Well, basically, people are in costumes. That was smart. Next time I want a costume, because that's like extra clothing.
Dressed like a bear.
Yeah, a penguin I would do.
And then
you go in, and you don't feel the water. I did not feel cold. In fact, we dived under. I did not feel
really?
It.
In which, in which body of water did you do
Grafton
this?
Lake.
Oh, Grafton Lake.
But then I stood up. Oh, my God. It was so cold then.
Yeah.
So I had a sister. You have to bring a handler with her. And she was in charge of, like, putting a robe on and a jacket and a hat and stepping into boots. It was amazing. Well, and she also had the alcohol.
Did anything freeze?
No. And we did make a lot of jokes about Harry when we were there. On that, no members froze, no frostbite.
There is a glow about her today.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. There is. Well, it's invigorating,
from frostbite.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome. We're all here, and it's good to have you with us. And did I give the panel at WAMC.org if you'd like to get in on the fun and be, you know, part of the program by giving us your thoughts on what we talk about today. Panel at WAMC.org. Okay, so let's talk. I think I want to talk first about the brouhaha between Hakeem Jeffries and Kevin McCarthy. Hakeem Jeffries has tapped Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell for the intelligence panel. And Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, said, hell no. We're going to block both of those. That ain't happening. It's escalating a clash with McCarthy, who has vowed to deny spots on the panel to both Democrats who hail from the state of California. In a letter dated Saturday, Jeffries argued that McCarthy has no justifiable reason to accept his appointment of Schiff, who served as chairman, not to accept, rather, who served as chairman of the intelligence panel until Republicans took control of the chamber, and Swalwell. It is my understanding that you intend to break with the longstanding House tradition of deference to the minority party, intelligence committee recommendations, and deny seats to ranking members Schiff and Swalwell, Jeffries wrote in the letter obtained by the Washington Post. The denial of seats of duly elected members of the House Democratic Caucus runs counter to the serious and sober mission of the intelligence committee. Republicans have been angling to deny spots in key panels to Democrats, partly in retaliation for votes by the Democratic-led House in the last Congress to remove Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar from committees. Some Republicans joined Democrats in voting to strip Greene and Gosar of their committee assignments. Rosemary?
Well, it's petty and venal and it's vengeful, and Congress has so much to do. We have massive gun violence. We have climate change. We have money problems. And this is what they're doing, these little silly battles. They're equating this to dumping Paul Gosar and Marjorie Taylor Greene from assignments, but they were promoting violence. They promoted awful actions against fellow members. There was good reason for them to be punished. There's nothing but vengefulness involved in the punishment of Swalwell and Adam Schiff. And I hope that most people, regardless of their political feelings, will see this as the stupid, petty bullying that's beneath a representative. And it's beneath. Has he definitely said he's not going to let him on, or is there any chance that he would bend? Because this is a chance for him to actually say, okay, we're going to try to make this work. I want to leave a little room for that, because it would be great.
It doesn't seem that way, but right. We shall see. Alan?
And when you think about it for a moment, what do you gain from this? It doesn't seem to me you gain anything except a certain spirit of vindictiveness. And what that shows people is that this may not be somebody who in my church or my synagogue or in my social group we'd like to follow.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly exposes the hypocrisy of the Republican leadership in the House of Representatives. And as you mentioned, Rosemary, under Nancy Pelosi, when they stripped Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar of their positions, it was bipartisan.
Right.
Republicans also supported
right.
that because of the outrageous promotion and amplification of acts of violence against fellow members of Congress by these two members of the Congress. I'm thinking of the pictures. I've seen three or four pictures on various news sites in the last week of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Kevin McCarthy hugging each other and just smiling each other.
I think it was the Post where they had the picture and they'd be like, you know, anything for you, Marjorie.
Which Post?
Right.
The Washington Post.
Oh, yeah. And so it's, you know, there is speculation about what might have been never made public about the agreement that McCarthy made with the Tea Party mega right wing whack jobs in his caucus to get the votes needed to become the speaker. And perhaps this was one of the deals that he made, that he would prevent competent, capable, hard-driving Democrats from having positions where they could actually challenge what's going on.
And Jeffries is indicating he's not going to roll over on these things. He's going to put up a fight. And I think at the end of the day, this is to the Democrats' advantage, because we're going to get to relitigate all these issues. Let's talk about the Ukrainian text message or the letter that was sent and whether or not Schiff acted appropriately, because the Washington Post fact checker has shown that all of these allegations against both Schiff and Swalwell are incorrect. They give it four Pinocchios, and I think that's the maximum Pinocchios.
Pinocchio is, for those who are not quite tuned in, it has to do with the length of your nose.
Well, lies from the Washington Post, right? Fact check the lies. Now, what I know this is quaint and silly, and I apologize, but you have two people in Schiff and Swalwell who have served on the committee, served in a leadership position on the committee, and have and you would think for continuity, and you would think for having people that have experience, that would be a logical step for most of the world if they were hiring a position, even if it, I mean, they're still, look, they're not the ranking party, we know that, but by the same token, wouldn't you still want people in there then who knew what they were doing?
Oh, you are so naive.
I know that's naive.
You know, Ilhan Omar is trying to get back on the Foreign Relations Committee because they're saying they're going to throw her off. That I'm not seeing Hakeem Jeffries coming out in support of her being retained on that committee at this point. She says she expects a decision by Friday, but so that will be interesting as well.
So Kevin McCarthy, as the Speaker, has veto power over minority appointments to these key committees.
Yeah.
And that Nancy Pelosi had that power also, and she exercised it very, very, very rarely and won, as we just said, bipartisan support. But this, will the public, I mean, this is the question I always have. Will the public see it for what it is, retribution, you know, paying deference to, you know, the very far right, you know, the Marjorie Taylor Greens in the House? Or will they just see it as, oh, tit for tat, they kicked out these people and now McCarthy's doing the same tit for tat and it's just the way politics
are. They'll say, what's a Swalwell?
Yeah. You have the answer in how the public is perceiving the documents, brouhaha between Biden and Trump. They see it as equivalent. They're all bad. Throw all the bums out. And that's what we're going to see now. It's all Congress. Those boys are at it again. Hmm. I have no hope that there'll be a nuanced.
There is no nuance anymore, is there?
Nope.
We'll take a break. We'll have our own nuance. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 24th of January. Really nice to have you with us. We are talking about the kerfuffle between House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries over two spots on the intelligence panel. Despite the fact that both these gentlemen have served on this committee and have, you know, experience. Kevin McCarthy has said that he is not interested in having them on, and Hakeem Jeffries has now said that he will fight this. I guess the question is what can you do? How much fight is there? You know, what
recourse does he have?
Exactly. What recourse
and
do you
what's
have?
The rationale for having the fight, which I think becomes very important. The people on the outside understand what's going on, that this is a basic prerogative of political parties and the rest. So I think a lot has to come loose here.
Yeah, I agree. I think he should take the same advice I would give to Kathy Hochul, which is move on. Get another nominee. There's lots of other good Democrats. Have Schiff and Swalwell working behind the scenes and put out lots of press releases about how awful the Republicans are, but just get moving.
But he shouldn't just do it. I think he should make
protest.
Sure that everybody knows that this is simply a political retribution and a tip to the weirdest, wackiest faction in his own caucus.
So why the retribution? I mean, what does the retribution mean to the average Joe in the street?
Well, it just shows that everything is mean-spirited and
they know
and
that, political.
I think this is all about pleasing Trump. These are Trump enemies he wants, and the Republicans, especially his little lackey Kevin there, are trying to say, oh, look, Daddy, we're getting at your enemies. It's awful.
Petty, no, I think you're right. Yeah.
Petty, venal, ridiculous stuff when there's really important issues before that body.
And you can't help but think that this is just the start of this, that we're going to see a lot more of it. I mean, this is the beginning.
But I wonder, and you know, if it's even possible that this may just be one more reason that some moderate Republicans just throw their hands up and say, I'm going to cooperate with, you know, the Democrats on this, and I'm going to stand, you know, apart from McCarthy. I mean, all he needs is a couple, and a lot of things could change. A lot of, you know, every single Republican voted for all these draconian rules that Kevin McCarthy put in when he became Speaker. But how many are really ready to, you know, become independents or ready to go across the aisle and broker deals and things like that?
And what's your answer to that?
I'm not sure there's a whole lot of moderate Republicans left in either house.
Yeah, I mean,
we keep hoping for, oh, all we, you know, that's like Joe Manchin in the Senate. Oh, all we need is two or three. There aren't two or three moderate votes. And I think that's true in the other place. They don't vote for infrastructure. They vote with their party.
But they did vote for infrastructure. There were a handful of...
Well, they may be moderate. But they're not going to vote that way. That's the problem.
Yeah,
they're not going to spend their political capital on saving Adam Schiff, who has really been demonized by the pro-Trump faction.
But wait, isn't Adam Schiff on one of the nightly entertainment programs?
He's not paid. He's on cable a lot. It's
are you asking about Law and Order?
Is he a host?
Yes, that's right.
Adam
Schiff is on
the old
Law
reruns.
Gotcha. All right. when our fictional and real worlds collide.
But you're right. Hakeem Jeffries has got to put up a little bit of fight. He just can't roll over on it. He's got to do something. I thought, when I hadn't heard anything in the last week or so, I thought maybe he was just going to accept this retribution. But at least he's putting up at least he wrote a letter, and we're talking about it.
All right, let's go to...
You think that the wackos would like it. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Jim Jordan would love to take on Schiff and...
I don't think they're up to it. I think that they know that Schiff is very, very clever. He has the prosecutor's vernacular, and he has his facts on the tips of his fingers, and I think that they're afraid of being embarrassed by his questions.
That would require the crazies to appreciate his skills and to think less of themselves, neither of which is possible.
Both are impossible, I agree.
Sherry says these Republicans appear to have the emotional intelligence of a middle schooler. They're acting like kids.
Yeah, that's I think a lot of people.
Well, that may be true, and I'd be the last person to say that. But the fact of the matter is, they control a lot of seats, don't they?
The Republicans.
Yes.
Yeah.
And somehow
have a simple majority. They can do a lot. Yep.
Keith writes, the House is a joke. Look no further than George Santos, or whatever his name is, having two committee assignments. He will be sitting next to Mark Molinaro on the Small Business Committee. Can we just all agree that the GOP-controlled House has no interest in governing? Their mission is undermine and destroy the institution.
We cannot agree on that, I don't believe. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, since you brought up George Santos, what's the latest lie that came out? Yeah. I believe it's his assertion during a podcast a few years ago that he had been the victim of assassination attempts.
Yeah, I saw it.
Saturday Night Live had such fun with him this weekend. My gosh!
But you can't really beat what the truth is.
The truth. The reality is worse.
It's just insane. And I
was never a drag queen, but the person who was dressed up was very beautiful.
I was never a drag queen, but hey, I'm just out there having fun on the weekend. You leave me alone.
Yes, that's it.
Oh. Okay.
You're right. The truth was better even than the written comedy.
No, it's just... it's,
I don't know how you beat that.
No, I know. It's bizarre. He said that he survived an assassination attempt. And oddly, I don't know, and this keeps happening to him, and I'm not sure why, but there's no record of it. Yeah. It's just,
we went through this disbelief with the Trump administration. Like Saturday Night Live, it was a field day for them for 4 years. It just couldn't believe the things he was saying because they were so demonstrably false. So maybe that conditioned us. Although Santos really,
it's a whole different level.
He is a different level, and it's hard to believe what could be. I shake at the idea of what could happen next. Like, who's the next iteration of George Santos? Oh.
Well, what's he going to do? I mean, that's the thing is that so far, even what is fascinating in watching him is even saying things like, well, I was in the district yesterday. Well, no, you weren't. We have a picture of you in D.C. I mean, it's not like this is stopping. It's just going to continue and continue and continue. And
how long can he last is the question, I think. Right?
And if he doesn't last, why won't he last? Well, in other words, what will be the influence?
Louis DeJoy is under the same sort of pressure, and he is still there.
Exactly.
That idiot in the post office is still there, despite no Democrat
this
in the administration
wants.
This reminds
me of that Seinfeld episode where George Costanza refused to quit his job,
yes,
and they locked
yes.
him out of his office and climbed in through a ventilator to get into the office or something. You know,
Seinfeld's like the Bible. You can
relate
anything
reference
to it.
To it.
Yeah.
And you know, Santos kind of maybe got his inspiration for
I him. Don't know. I was prepared to have this conversation on the radio with you, so I'm not really. I don't know that I'm up for it. But
what you prepare?
I'm bracing.
Please.
My stomach
well,
is
no,
clenched.
I just don't know. The DeJoy thing seems very different to me. If you have someone who is incompetent is making ideological decisions that seem silly. Okay, I can understand that, but that's a lot different. He's not saying, when I was out putting mail out, you know, I got assassinated.
You're misunderstanding me. I don't think the cases are equivalent. I think the idea of pressuring him out of the job is something that's inevitable and easy to do.
Oh, I see.
Because
okay.
DeJoy also has been. He's hated. Yeah. He's not wanted by anybody, but, you know, he's got the law on his side, and he's just hanging in there. He doesn't care if he's hated. And I think Santos has some of that same stuff.
I agree, except that Santos, and this is what I was saying a moment ago, it's every day. I mean, you don't hear about DeJoy every day.
I'm trying to do it every day. I mention it every time.
It
is. You're right.
But Santos is just the gift that keeps on giving. And every time that if they can't get him on something new, then they go back and listen to past interviews and just bring up all of this stuff. And it's not like it's partially true or that it's misconstrued. There is nothing true.
Yeah, no, I wonder. I mean, I've heard different people speculate. I know, you know, on the radio, we never wanted to speculate about the mental health of someone like Trump, but we did anyway. And, you know, this man probably, I'm talking about Santos, probably has a psychic disorder. And
yes.
He very well may have it. And that may shield him from the pressure that is on him, and he's able to survive by just continuing to you know, sort of create this fantasy that he believes. Or he could have a nervous breakdown. I mean, there might be a health issue. I don't wish that on him. I just wish he would.
There was a channel.
Do what like a lot of Republicans are urging him to do and step down.
Channel 7 in New York was following him. He was coming into, I guess, JFK, and they were following him through the luggage pickup there, and they said, "I'm not going to do an interview here. You have to go through my office." And the reporter, in all seriousness, said, "Well, there is no one in your office." And is that true? I mean, does he not even have anybody working for him? I mean, that in and of itself is amazing that there's nobody. And he said, "Well, I'll get back to you." And they said, "Well, you have nobody there. There's no one in the office to take care of any of the constituent services." And so that's really interesting. And as a result of that, it just seems that whatever he does seems to get screwed up. And sometimes it's just silly things like, you know, I need 146 people to tell me and I won't and I'll resign. I mean, 146,000. That's how many people voted in my area. You know, things like that you screw up.
Yeah,
but he's being really rattled, too. I forgive him those kind of errors. If you have reporters hounding at your feet,
you make them
slip of the tongue.
I think it's sad. I mean, I looked at him.
It
is sad.
It's
hounding.
No,
it is sad.
Being followed through with cameras and microphones poked in his face, I don't think he's – I mean, it has to –
Yeah, but I want him to keep doing it.
Well – I mean, he's
you
kind
want
of,
them to keep doing it?
Yeah.
Him
I mean, he's kind of inviting it. I mean, he has invited it
right.
by his past
I
actions.
I want the reporters to keep on
asking
questions and chasing
them. Well, on
them,
some
yes.
level, you got to figure he wants it. right?
Over the weekend, he tweeted that he would have a surprise, in quote marks, for the journalists. Yes.
I mentioned that yesterday.
That, and that we're stalking.
Do we have a surprise?
I was just looking. I don't know what the, you know, it's so hard.
Well, Halle was damn near assassinated. Maybe I guess that, I mean, that's a
maybe
surprise.
Maybe that was a surprise. Yeah. Yeah.
Were you really surprised?
The
surprise is we had no surprise.
That's the only surprise.
Mike Spain is so sweet, writes Jonathan. His apparently eternal hope for moderate Republicans to come through and do the right thing.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so naive.
How cute. He restores some tiny portion of my faith in the goodness of humanity. The Republicans show over and over again, and over and over and over and over again,
and over and over and over,
that they fall in line with the party leadership and support of the party's primary goals, power and money. The belief that hope lies with the mythical middle of either party or the population as a whole is a lovely one, but it's illusory. It does, I believe, the Republicans ought to look at what is actually happening and respond to that, not to what they hope the Republicans will do. That from Jonathan.
I think, Jonathan, unfortunately, I think you're correct.
But Mike is also a sweet, nice man, just for the record.
Yes.
The best.
I think we would agree with that.
Freak of nature.
Let's see. All right. I don't know what that means.
This is interesting.
What?
The letters.
Oh, no. People write jokes. You know, they write jokes.
George Santos jokes?
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't understand. If I don't understand them, I
got to read them through to get the punchline.
Yeah, just to,
get the intonation.
Them.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think George was very happy that he was impersonated on Saturday Night Live. He was probably just thrilled.
He probably was. And it was a great impersonation.
Bowen Yang did an amazing job.
So funny.
Bowen Yang did an amazing job the three different times that
he did it on the show. Yeah,
which
they
is,
really they know
fantastic.
A good thing when the comedy gods hand it to them.
Pretty, yes, absolutely. Hey, panel, who would be crazy enough to work for George Santos now? Well, that's a fair question.
I thought they did set him up with some people to kind of handle him. And I mean,
there was an exodus on the first day, I believe, that they brought him into the office, and then they all said, now we're going.
Right, but I mean, it's ordinarily, if there's Alan, you've been on the Hill, you know,
indeed.
If a freshman Congress member comes in, his party will set him up with people who know how to make things work, know how to set up a constituent relations office, know how to set up a press office and all that.
Know which of the three buildings to go into, yes.
Have they not done that for Santos? And wouldn't it be advisable to do that for Santos?
Well, they may have tried and we don't know.
And minimize the embarrassment that keeps coming? I don't know. And now the big story is that the Congress member from the North Country, Elise Stefanik, has apparently had lent resources and advised Santos during his campaign to run for the House.
What makes that especially troubling, if there is such a thing involving Elise Stefanik, was that they all knew. That was false. It was not, because everyone's been saying, well, they have an easy out. They can just say, look, he duped us. We looked at the stuff. It all seemed fine. And it isn't. So now we'll get rid of him. But she went out, and apparently a lot of people who fled and said, well, I'm not going to give him any money. The guy's a nut job. A quote, by the way. But she kept on holding the events and kept on collecting the money on his behalf.
Right. The Republican leadership, including Elise Stefanik, has been silent on Santos's credibility or his qualifications for job. They really need to step forward, I think. You know, I was thinking that maybe people in his district he still had some support in his district, especially among Trump supporters.
Doesn't
but the latest poll, 79% of the people in that district want him gone.
So what would you do, Judy?
If I was Santos?
Yes.
Well, I don't have, I would have resigned right away.
Wouldn't have run in the first place.
I'm a believer in the truth.
Well, assuming you are all of those things, but you want to hold on, you like political power.
Keep on lying.
I'm sorry.
I would keep on lying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just, I mean, what can they cannot do anything to him unless the Federal Elections Commission finds something illegal about the campaign finance.
Yeah, look at how he's making more money now, if you go by, you know, documented proof, than he ever has.
You mean the salary as a congressman?
His salary as a congressman.
Well, he went from zero to 11 million.
Yeah, there.
So,
but that's not documented. No, I mean, this is money he's actually getting, and that's got to be, he's got to like that, if nothing else.
I love that story. I went back and I read the Times article.
Yeah.
The original Times article from December 19th. That is a great article.
But I have my students going through it.
It's so good. But it's just that they were driving, the head of the Republican committee was driving around, and Santos was showing him his mansion, and the guy was looking and said, that's not your mansion.
So I just contacted a friend who works, and she's an aide to a senator. Yeah. And asked about Santos, and she goes, apparently he has hired some people, young Republicans who want to start on the Hill and who need a paycheck. You know, people thought the same about Trump. Who would want to work for that lunatic? And then everyone did. Today's Republican Party doesn't care. There's no low, too low to render someone unhireable in the future.
Well, Rosemary, I would only say that there are plenty of Democrats who would fit that description, too. In other words, convenience and money becomes very important.
Yeah, that's true.
And we talk about the fact that, well, maybe the Republicans got initially duped. But, you know, that's not a defense. I think if you support someone for office, you do need to do the kind of background checks that were not done.
Well,
in this
case. By, again, through the reporting, I believe, in the Washington Post, they did do the search. They found out, and a lot of people just bailed out and said, we don't want to support this guy. We have to take a break. We are late, very, very late. My apologies, Mike. We'll take a break when we come back, and we'll continue. Panel at WAMC.org. My newest theory, writes Lisa, is that George Santos is punking the Republicans. He is a prankster and has totally punked the Republican Party because they look stupid and can't even see it.
He's going to end up writing a book. They'll turn it into a movie. Leonardo DiCaprio will play him. And he's
Sasha
set.
Sasha Cohen will play him, I think.
Yeah. Either way, he ends up on Wikipedia. He's part of the historical record now.
Yeah, lying has its rewards.
Yep.
Just ask Donald Trump.
Does anyone remember John Lovitz's Saturday Night Live?
Of course, we all do.
We've been talking about that.
That's who'll play him in the movie.
I believe John Lovitz was on The Tonight Show doing that impression of Santos. I'm pretty sure.
That's hilarious.
It was The Tonight Show. Also, according to what I heard on WAMC on Saturday morning, the New York GOP was calling him George Scamtos as early as 2020. They all knew. They just got caught by the redistricting, and they were stuck with them. Oh, the other thing that the editor of that local paper said, this is the North Shore Leader, I believe.
Yeah.
He suspects that the $700,000 is total fabrication. Santos just made it up.
I heard that interview, on WAMC with the David Remick.
And so could you remind us all what that $700,000 was?
Yeah, basically the $700,000 that Santos says he loaned himself for his campaign.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This guy, I think he has a good point, suspects that he never lent himself that. He just put that on the form because it looks really good.
So there's no $700 in a bank somewhere.
$700,000. Right. And he did get money from, as we know, from Elise Stefanik and others. Others did support him. But I think it goes back to that original New York Times story, which ran in December after the election, unfortunately, before the public could find out, you know?
I heard the reporters who wrote that story talk about why they did that. They did it. They started to do a profile because he had won in one of these districts, and that's how they stumbled upon it. I was thinking that maybe they had been slipped some research.
It was just in due diligence discovered it.
It wouldn't be the first time, Judy, right?
But, correct.
But it goes back to who did the Democrats hire as a to do a research.
Right.
Opposition research.
Well, and the Republicans again, they likely knew much of it. I have to go back. I was at the time when you said this, Rosemary. I didn't say anything because I hadn't read the article, but the North Shore leader, as you said, it was very different.
Yeah, I mean, they've been elevated. Their work has been elevated in hindsight. What they wrote at the time was nothing like what the New York Times did. No. It was hardly a thorough, and they mostly looked at the money, and they said, there's something really funny here. We don't like it. It wasn't definite. Now, that aside, it was enough that any reporter on Newsday, who should have been covering this, should have picked up on it. Yeah. It's Newsday's bad reporting.
So I finally read the article that was in the North Shore Leader in September, and it was after they had been waiting for several weeks and for him to file his paperwork. So he finally files his paperwork, and they said, "Oh, I wonder where he got the $11 million." And then they started to look around. The other thing too is that they did bring up the question, a lot of the questions that came about his academic record, his question about his working at what was it, Goldman Sachs Citibank.
Yeah.
And it was all there, and in fact they kept on referring him to him as the elusive and controversial congressional candidate. I don't know. There was a lot there. I mean, I agree with you.
You think they did a better job than I had?
I think they did. I mean, let's put it this way.
They raised a lot of good questions. Yeah.
Right. I think if I were for a local newspaper with little to no resources to come in and to do a paper like that, Maureen O'Malley, I believe is the woman's name, wrote the article. I mean, it nailed it. It's what we're talking about still. I mean, did they get into the drag thing? No. Did they get into the...
No. And the New York Times
didn't have the
either.
Resources yeah. to go to Brazil.
But that's what happens when you write a...
I mean, they didn't.
No, they don't. No.
But what...
Times
don't. The New York Times didn't go dig that out of Brazil either. When you write a big story, everybody else reads it and says, oh my gosh, that's Anthony. That's that. I know that guy, George. And the tips come in. So that's what's happened with this story.
But the big difference, of course, and the huge difference, as far as I'm concerned, is that they wrote their story in September. They wrote it September 10th. It was published on September 10th.
Yeah. And they also didn't endorse him. They came out and they wrote him using some of that same, you know, subjective language. He's elusive. And so for that reason. But that should have tipped off Newsday, too, for a Republican paper to suddenly endorse a Democratic candidate. That's a sign that something's going on, too.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We are joined by a fantastic group. We have Alan Chartok, Mike Spain. I don't know. Is that going well? Judy Patrick and what's your name? Rosemary Armeo is here. Very nice to have you all here. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's move on to other things, shall we, and talk about what else is going on. I wanted to bring and do an update on the shooting that took place over the weekend in California. But before we go to that, we'll mention that that 11 people were killed in that shooting in Monterey Park. 7 people were killed in Half Moon Bay as California mourns another mass shooting. The shooting shook the seaside town between San Francisco and Santa Cruz as the state was still reeling from an attack in Monterey Park just a day and a half before. A gunman killed 7 people in 2 locations on Monday, shaking a state still mourning another loss. The police arrested a 67-year-old Half Moon Bay resident in connection with the shootings after he was found in his car in the parking lot of a San Mateo County Sheriff's Office substation in the town. There was no continuing threat to the community. He was taken into custody without incident and was fully cooperating. Investigators have not established a motive. According to the sheriff's department, the local authorities were working with the FBI and have not uncovered a criminal history or past incidents of either of the scenes. Governor Gavin Newsom of California wrote on Twitter that as news of the shooting broke, he had been at the hospital meeting victims of a mass shooting on Saturday in Monterey Park. In that attack, a gunman fatally shot 11 people. Tragedy upon tragedy is what Governor Newsom said. Monday shootings took place around 2:20 p.m. in Half Moon Bay. Mike?
Yeah, you know, when someone is driven and angry and has a vengeance and they want to do something really awful, it's easy to get a gun and do something awful. An automatic, a semi-automatic weapon that very, very effectively kills people. And they're just available and they're easy to get. And until we get, perhaps a Supreme Court that, like prior to the 1980s, interprets the Second Amendment as something that allows state militias and states and the government to control firearms a whole lot more than they're controlled now, this is the way it's going to be. And as we say over and over, there's more guns than there are people in the United States, and it's very difficult to put the toothpaste back in the tube. And if someone is angry, like up. Evidently, I don't know what's going on here in these two cases in California, but the indications are that both of these people had axes to grind with places that they were associated with and decided to take it out. It is unusual that one is in his 60s and one is in his 70s. Ordinarily, it's younger people that behave like this and
young
done terrible
men,
things.
Yeah.
Young men. That's absolutely
As Amy Schumer says, in all mass shootings, the one question you don't have to ask is, what was it, a man or a woman?
Yeah. Yeah, but usually you don't have to ask if they were
in their teens or their 20s.
Yeah.
Which is unusual.
So it is unusual, but it shows that, people suffer from mental illness during all phases of their lives.
So you do have a proposal that you might...
Do I have a proposal?
Yeah.
Well, my proposal is that organizations like what's the name of the group? Mothers Who Want Answers or something. Yeah.
Moms Demand Action. Moms
Demand Action. Sorry. Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks, Judy. I mean, organizations like that deserve to be supported, and they need to. Clearly, the majority of people want to see, better. Gun control in many, many ways,
Every poll shows that, by the way.
Every poll shows that, and yet it's one more thing where the minority rules in a democracy.
Democracy gun culture.
Right, and they've manipulated the system, and we know that it's been documented. The NRA turned in from a gun safety lobby into a gun manufacturer's lobby, and now we're paying the price.
Judy?
Last night when I heard about the second shooting, it's almost like I threw up my hands and said, I give up. This is,
right.
We're going nowhere. Especially when you think that there are, 360 million guns, as a conservative estimate, already out there. So what they're proposing is to restrict further sales. Well, that doesn't really do anything about all the guns that are out there, all the guns that can be manufactured, at home using, innovative technology. I think we really need to look at the Second Amendment. I know this is a tough issue to address, but there's a reason for the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. Because that supports our democracy. What was the reason for the Second Amendment? Look at that. The reason for there is no God-given right for a gun. And I think that...
Oh, doesn't it say that in the amendment?
And I think that...
People think so.
That's what... I understand that people like to target shoot. I understand that people like to hunt. But this, the availability of assault rifles is a whole...
And the rationale has always been that when the government starts up, I'll be able to shoot back at them.
Exactly. And I've heard that articulated from people.
Sure.
They want their guns so they can form their own militia and raise up against the government. Is that something that we really want? Again, I don't think there's the Second Amendment is a crucial underpinning of our democracy.
Unfortunately, what you think and what gives here is different. I certainly agree with you. But how do you do it?
Well, there's been other amendments to the Constitution that have been undone by new amendments, and that's what it would legally take. It would take the process to amend the Constitution to further clarify so that a court couldn't just suddenly, unilaterally in the 1980s, change its whole view of what the Second Amendment means. And up until that time, it did not mean this unfettered access to anything goes.
Right. We can't have like a howitzer, right? Or
you can't. That's true. Or you can't have a full-level automatic machine gun. But, I mean, so the government does have some legal authority to manage and control firearms. They just don't have the willpower to do it, and the
or the ability.
Yeah, or the ability at this point, as Judy said, 315 million.
I so hate these days that I'm on after a mass shooting, because we have had everything you've all said, which is all completely true, we've said dozens of times before, and still it goes on. It does feel like we're at a complete impasse and people are dying in the meantime. So I've given up on, yes, we should eliminate or radically alter our interpretation, as we have once before, of the Second Amendment. But that isn't going to happen. If there's any changing in constitutional amendments, it's likely going to be done by conservatives who are taking over state legislatures, right, and are close to being able to convene the 33 states it would take to put together a conference. So it isn't going to be liberals or gun control advocates who will be in charge of that. So instead, why don't we try some little things, Democrats? Like, for example, you cannot have a gun till you're old enough to vote. That's easy. You cannot be on the no-fly list and be able to buy a gun. That would be easy. Just go for some simple changes, sort of in the order of the simple changes that were made by the Biden administration bill that passed, and they're touting it as, oh, the first gun control legislation in 30 years. It's pathetic that that's what it is, because it's completely inadequate. But at least it got the ball rolling. Could
you
we
can
just
still
continue
buy assault
that?
Weapons, though, can't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Easily.
But
it's
as a 17-year-old, you can go in and buy an assault weapon. Yes, you can.
But we've all been, I think everyone in this room has been probably part of one of the conversations where you mentioned some of the things that you just mentioned.
Yep.
And they say, but that's how they start.
Yeah. Well,
they
that's
come
the
and they take this, and then they take that, and then the next thing you know, dot, dot, dot.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That is how we start. They're right about that. And we should be doing that. We're not. It's like we just throw up our hands. And the more of these shootings that there are, it seems more of us are doing it. I felt like it's like, oh, no, I have to. Oh, no, another one. You know, it's crazy.
Maybe the people who are in favor of gun control should take a lesson from the people who are pro-life and how they got what they wanted at the federal level. It could be a long-term strategy to get changes at the Supreme Court. Initially, they were just going to chip away at it, but eventually they got the whole kit and caboodle when they overturned Roe versus Wade.
All right, let's go to another story, and we'll talk for a moment about the Fulton County grand jury investigating former President Donald Trump may release their report very soon. This is interesting because the grand jury has been investigating the president. The panel was dissolved 2 weeks ago. A judge will consider whether its report should be made public. That decision will come down today. For the better part of 8 months, they gathered inside the Fulton County Courthouse, reviewing evidence in a sprawling criminal investigation into whether former President Donald Trump and his allies broke the law when they sought to overturn Trump's 2020 election loss in Georgia. Now the findings of the 26-member special purpose grand jury could soon be released. 2 weeks after declaring the grand jury's work complete and dissolving the panel, Fulton County Superior Court Judge Robert McBurney has scheduled a hearing Tuesday to determine whether to make its report public. That debate is likely to draw conflicting views. Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, is expected to pursue charges and could argue for parts, if not all, of the report to be unsealed in coming weeks. Attorneys for those who have been notified they are targets of the investigation, meanwhile, are likely to press McBurney to keep that report private and to keep it private indefinitely.
Why does justice move so slowly? You know, and wasn't the DA doing some of her own investigation. Isn't a grand jury supposed to be an investigative unit anyway?
This is an unusual grand jury. It was set up without the ability to bring or recommend any kind of indictment. I think one thing that is arguing strongly for release of the document is Donald Trump, who's already come out and said, see, I was never called to testify. I have nothing to do with this. Has nothing to do with me. I'm in the clear. And I don't believe that's what the report shows. I think that's why they impaneled this very unusual investigatory but powerless, toothless
One of the outcomes of this grand jury report would be a compelling argument to convene a more traditional grand jury,
absolutely,
which could issue indictments. It would be a fairly rapid process, could be, unlike most justice. Mm.
I don't see it coming out today. Yeah. I think that prosecutor is going to keep it under wraps and do exactly that, make her own decisions about indictments and impaneling other criminal grand juries.
Make her own decision about bringing it. Will the DA get the right to bring it to a regular grand jury?
DA has the right to either bring charges herself. You don't need definitely a grand jury or to convene a grand jury.
The grand jury is supposed to be a ham sandwich, as we all know.
Right.
In other words,
the
grand jury does what the DA says.
Right.
So I agree. I don't think we're going to see what's in the report today and see a list of all the people it recommends be prosecuted in connection with
We already have a hint of it because they've let out a list of the people of interest who were told they were people of interest. Rudy Giuliani is a great target. I hope he gets it.
And one of the interesting things is the Georgia state law, RICO, is, you know, the organized crime statute. It's a much more encompassing, and it's easier to bring those organized crime charges. In the state of Georgia than it would be maybe in other states. And it could make it so it was a conspiracy, you know, basically call it what it is, a conspiracy to overturn the will of the voters. And they have, you know, it could be very interesting, but I think you're right, Judy. It's going to happen very slowly.
And I don't think there's going to be a lot of news in here, a lot of things that will surprise us. I think, although it's possible that they have uncovered some nuggets that haven't leaked, that we haven't known about, and that would be the more interesting development in the case. But we know most of this. We know about the call. Can you please find me 14,000 votes or whatever. And the fact that the other thing we know is they didn't interview Trump, and that is a very telling omission. They didn't interview him for a reason, and that could very well be because he's the target of the investigation. He would have been told that, and he's not confirming or denying whether or not he is a target.
Mm-hmm. From June to December, a litany of prominent Republicans appeared before the committee, including Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, Senator Lindsey Graham, and former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, along with dozens of other witnesses, including some who have not previously given public testimony on what they knew about Trump's efforts to overturn the election. Danny Porter, a former district attorney from a county, Gwinnett County, north of Atlanta, said, "We are talking about citizens, not experts or bureaucrats. And whatever they say, that adds a sense of credibility to it," I think.
Yeah, but what do they say? What do they say? There's nothing there.
Yeah.
And then what does the DA do?
The content of the report
That's why I'd want to keep that report really, really under wraps.
Will it leak out?
Well, I'm sorry, I was going to say if the judge were to rule today that it should be released, it could still be appealed. So there's no way we're seeing it for a long time, even if we...
The content of the report has been hotly debated across Atlanta, where those closely tracking the Fulton County investigation have likened the guessing game over the grand jury's work to watching for smoke signals from the Vatican, the method used by Catholic cardinals to alert the public whether a new pope has been chosen.
You know, there can be as many as 24 people, I think, on a grand jury. It is amazing nothing has leaked or no hint of all at all.
They're pretty good at keeping.
I've known
grand jurors
scared, right? They really they keep them pretty scared about.
Well, you guys are both very good reporters, Rosemary and Judy.
I've had grand jurors talk to me before.
Is that right?
Yeah. They're regular people.
Yeah, the Watergate famously had Woodward and Bernstein famously
chastised by John Sirica, the judge. Oh man.
On Monday, Trump's Georgia-based legal team in a statement implied there had been no formal contact between the former president and his legal team and Fulton County prosecutors. "We have never been a part of this process," the attorney said, but they did not immediately respond when asked if Trump had been given notice that he's a target of the investigation, as you were saying, Judy. But Tuesday's hearing on the special grand jury report could offer some added clarity, as attorneys for potential targets are expected to appear in court to make arguments about whether the document should be released, even as they have not been privy to what it says.
Hmm. Well, this may put a pall on the plans for a big campaign rally in South Carolina, the neighboring state, in next week sometime, where Trump is supposed to pull together many of his supporters within the party and kind of propel his candidacy for the 2024 Republican nomination forward.
So if you don't release it, what happens? Is it just...
I've covered stories where there's been a grand jury report and it never gets released. They use grand jury investigations to, like, corruption or gambling, or sometimes it never gets released and it's a big mystery to the public unless someone leaks it. It could go nowhere. It could be stuck in a vault someplace.
Is it against the law to leak it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it's a violation. Oh, yeah. Officer of the court can go to
prison. I asked that question just to clarify this.
Yeah.
It's not
illegal for a newspaper to print it if it gets leaked to them.
Somebody has to hand it to them.
Yes.
Right.
But the process ordinarily, let's separate it from this particular case. The process is that this preponderance of evidence has been compiled. And now it's up to the courts to decide whether a formal grand jury investigation based on that evidence should proceed, from which real indictments could come. What judge would not see? Well, we know that some judges might not. But, I mean, ordinarily, how could they not proceed if there is a preponderance of evidence of wrongdoing and crimes being committed? Big crimes.
And the big word is preponderance.
Well, I mean,
it's a value word.
Yeah. I mean, okay, I'll say it another way. What if there's a whole lot of evidence that something really bad happened? How can they not do a grand jury?
Yeah, and what's the statute of limitations on this thing anyway?
That's right. Yeah.
Must be running close. We must be pressing on it, huh? You know, there's also that view that you give more latitude to a president, you give more latitude to a senator who's involved. These are extremely high-level people. We don't do a good job going after rich white
men. Do you give a lot of latitude to a former New York City mayor who's embarrassed himself all over the country?
Him we got to get. Yeah.
He was also identified as a potential
person of
target
interest,
or whatever. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to some letters before we hit the break here at the bottom of the hour. And we welcome you to do this as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. A lot of these on guns, talking about gun culture. America seems to me has a sick gun culture. The availability of guns are everywhere throughout the world, but we have military assault automatic with high volume cartridge guns in the hands of demented citizens. Those that prevent better control of gun ownership are responsible for the mass shootings. Problem is, they are in the minority, but loud in objections. Just now, someone on the panel wistfully said, "Why does justice move so slowly?" That would have been Judy Patrick. Depending upon class and color, it doesn't. During the time Trump has clogged his schedule with obvious crimes and is still free, I'd bet legions of lower class and colors have been imprisoned for minor crimes, comparatively speaking. That from Jim. Suzanne says, "It's surely not impossible to alter the violence promulgated endlessly and mindlessly via popular culture. The fighting and killing in gaming movies is discouraging. Young men in particular need to learn that nurturing and empathy are positive attributes. The Buffalo Bills' heartfelt response to their injured teammate is an example." And we have, let's see, what are they telling us in this letter? I don't know. So I'll go to another letter. What is the panel? All right, we'll hold that till after our break. We'll have a little more time then. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'd love to hear from you. All you have to do is write to us. Again, panel@wamc.org. We have our last 15 minutes or so with our group when we come back, and we have time to get some letters and some final topics. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Judy Patrick, and Rosemary Armeo with us on this Tuesday morning, and we'll continue our program after news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We were talking about M&Ms during the break. I apologize. There was we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we welcome you to be with us. All right, let's go to a couple of other things. Were you saying something else?
If I was, I'm not now.
Okay, all right. We have a couple of other things that I want to get to before we break this morning. And again, we want to hear from you. We'll have time for that as well. I do not know what I did with the... I had this all lined up and ready to go.
Can I address Alan's question?
Please,
we were
talking about
the number of guns. So U.S. gun owners possess 393 million weapons, according to a 2018 report by the Small Arms Survey, a Geneva-based organization. That is higher than the country's population, which was 330 million.
Right.
So that's where that number came. Yeah, yeah. It was 2018.
So you frequently hear there's more guns than there are people in the U.S., and it's true.
And there probably are.
Yeah. All right. What I was looking for, I have found. Depleted under Trump, a traumatized EPA struggles with its mission. That's from the New York Times. Despite an injection of funding, the agency still has not recovered from an exodus of scientists that took place. They had a lot of great scientists, a lot of great policy experts, insiders, and critics say that they have left because of what happened during the Trump administration. The nation's top environmental agency is still reeling from that exodus of more than 1,200 scientists and policy experts. The chemicals chief said her staff can't keep up with a mounting workload. The enforcement unit is prosecuting fewer polluters than at any time in the past two decades. And now this, the stressed out, stretched thin Environmental Protection Agency is scrambling to write about a half dozen highly complex rules and regulations that are central to President Biden's climate goals. The new rules have to be enacted within the next 18 months, lightning speed in the regulatory world, or they could be overturned by a new Congress or a new administration. The regulations are already delayed months past EPA's own self-imposed deadlines, raising concerns from supporters in Congress and environmental groups. It's very fair to say we are not where we hoped we would be, said Miles Keough, who's the executive director of the National Association of Clean Air Agencies, which represents most state and local air regulators. As staffing at the EPA thinned out, the workload only increased, both the agency and its critics say. Career employees are being worked to death, according to Betsy Sutherland, a former top EPA scientist. They're under the greatest pressure that they've ever been under.
Remember,
who would like to take this?
Remember back in 2017, there was a protest of a lot of scientists who were who were speaking out against his anti-science policy and the depletion of or the proposed depletion of scientific institutions at that time. And it was, I mean, thousands of them turned out, kind of the, not to paint them with a broad brush, but the kind of the nerds of the world turned out for this protest, which was real interesting to see.
I would say the good nerds.
The good nerds.
The good nerds. Well, I think it just demonstrates it's a lot
easier
evil
nerds.
To destroy an institution. You can do it by defunding it. You can do it by, orders that they do things contrary to their mission. You can do it by putting incompetent people or sinister people in charge. And it hasn't just happened at the EPA, but we're seeing the result of it, the legacy of the Trump approach. You saw it in the IRS.
State
You've seen
Department.
It happen. And the State Department.
Yeah.
Exactly. You see, you defund it. You don't fill openings. You put people in there whose mission is to make it essentially fail. And it reminds me of there was a book John Boehner wrote, the former Republican Speaker of the House, after he left office, where he said basically these people. He's talking about the Tea Party and the right wing, for example. He said, what they are really interested in is chaos. They want to throw sand in the gears of hated federal programs until it fails and they finally prove that it's beyond saving. And then when it does fail, they say, see, it didn't work. And it's very hard to then reverse it. That's what they're trying to do with the IRS now. They're trying to give it enough resources so that it can audit people who make over $400,000 and have complicated tax returns and bring in the revenue that those people rightfully owe. And it would do a great deal towards balancing the budget. It'd be a lot better than cutting Social Security and Medicare. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's you break the system and then you can't build it back up quickly enough.
In fact, the irony here is that the Biden administration, in trying to put an emphasis on climate, has put tons of money into new regulation and new infrastructure, and that's compounded the problem for the and resource depleted EPA. So
because they don't have the regulatory power.
If you were a scientist who got booted out in the way that he booted out people, he disgraced them, was ridiculous. Would you come back? I mean, Trump could be the president again in 2 years.
Of course.
Would you come back? Yeah. No. It must be terribly hard to attract talent right now.
I should note two things. One is that our own
Judith Henke,
who is a former EPA regional administrator, would save the story for her and to talk about as a member of the agency and is watching this very closely. But she is in California for the month, so not with us and won't be back until February. But we'll get her on this. I'm sure she's already talked about some aspects of it. The other thing I wanted to mention is that to Rosemary's point, the climate activists are what they find most worrisome is that the agency has yet to propose rules to limit greenhouse gas emissions from new gas-fired power plants and existing coal and gas plants, measures that energy analysts say will be necessary to eliminate fossil fuels from the electricity sector by 2035, as Mr. Biden has pledged to do. The agency has recently been reassessing its regulatory plans. The millions of dollars now available through the climate law to make it cheaper and easier for utilities and automobile manufacturers to move away from fossil fuels has led the agency to consider whether it could impose more stringent emission goals than initially conceived. But back to the earlier point that it takes, this is what you were saying about justice, but it takes so long to get the rules and to do the regulations, you have an 18-month window. How do you get that done?
Right, especially after you've been depleted and basically deliberately underfunded. Yeah.
And, you know, the EPA's enforcement arm has always been understaffed. I mean, even at the height of the EPA, they rely on voluntary compliance with a lot of things. If you run a sewage treatment plant, you take your measurements and you send them in. I mean, an EPA official is not coming out and taking a water sample. Right. This happens all over. We really need more enforcement authority for the EPA as well, and that's not here. They're just hoping to get some regulation that they can try to enforce.
Yeah, I think if they don't get them in place before Biden leaves office, and you know, maybe he'll be reelected if he does continue on and run. But if he were to, if Trump were to run and win, or another Republican were to run and win, they could basically, if they don't get these rules in place, they could stop it. As soon as they get into office.
We had a parallel situation when Obama, after months and months of this same sort of bureaucratic or process delay, finally gets new rules passed on dumping coal waste into streams.
Right.
And then Trump came in and ditched it like his first month. I don't know why the procedures take as long as they do, but it's got to be immensely frustrating. Judith maybe could talk about this, to do all that work and put all that effort in. People agree on it, and then it's bounced out in the next administration.
And it seems, I don't know whether this is fair or not, but it seems like we're wasting valuable time.
Say that about everything we've talked about this morning.
No, that's true. You
know, this fight over who's going to sit where in the House of Representatives. I mean, you know, there's so much that needs to be done, and so many things that are
so few people able to do it.
No, but yeah. The Republicans will argue we don't want to do things. We want government to be smaller. We're happy that we're not making any progress on these issues because this isn't really an issue. There's nothing wrong with the environment. There's nothing wrong with our gun ownership. So if they're happy for nothing to happen.
Just so that the listeners understand, you're quoting the Dundleheads.
I am. Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting that we do nothing on the climate, indeed. Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of people like small government. The smaller, the better.
Vincent writes to us and says, those experts that left federal agencies' protest against Trump or who didn't fight Trump's interference are just as responsible and guilty for the current situation.
I don't agree with that.
But
no, I wouldn't agree.
I mean, you can fight City Hall, but fighting the Trump White House is a whole different matter. They were made fun of. Their jobs were put on the line. They have families to feed, too. Now, that's just not fair.
All right. And let's see. This one is sorry for the noise. We go to this one. This is all part of Steve Bannon's philosophy, Chaos in the Agencies, which we have seen move through the federal government. We are out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Alan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Mike Spain, good to have you here as always. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Judy Patrick and Rosemary Armeo. Rosemary, we'll see you tomorrow.
No, you won't.
Oh, that's right. You're away for a while. Off.
She's going swimming.
That's right. Yes, she's back in the lake.
Back to warmer waters.
We'll see you in a few weeks. So,
okay.
Travel safe
and
we'll think of you. We'll think of you, especially when people go, did you fire Rosemary? Where the hell's Rosemary? Why are you silencing her? Those are fun letters.
I love those listeners.
Us too. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.